Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle. And today, finally, after several weeks of delay, because the Bears just, they can't stop doing things, Kyle.
They were creating content. How just dare they?
Over us? And over. We had so much to talk about. And now we finally get to talk about the rest of the quarterback class. We've run through Caleb Williams and Drake May. You ran through Jaden Daniels, literally. Just ran
him
right over.
I did.
You plowed him. And now we are on to running through some other young men, getting balls deep in these young men.
I do think there is one more quarterback we do need to discuss briefly first. And I think, I mean, for us, it was a very... Like, we are kind of through the grieving process for Justin Fields. I think you and I both started that.
Yeah.
Kind of in September. And we, you know, the record is the record. If you guys want to go back and listen through old episodes, you can kind of hear our evolution on Justin. And I think we really said everything we have to say about Justin Fields. But I think we would be remiss as a Bears podcast not to start this episode by acknowledging that Justin Fields is no longer a Chicago Bear. That did happen in the interim. I handled it with such grace and class. Yeah. I certainly did not spend the immediate aftermath of that trade going through and viciously dunking on every Fields truther who had called me a fat idiot for months every time that I acknowledged the reality that the next quarterback of the Chicago Bears, who could it be? Probably Caleb Williams. But yeah, so Justin Fields is gone. How are we feeling about that, Travis?
I mean, we're feeling good, but yeah, I mean, my take is, and we've seen this, a lot of people have gone back and done this already, but we made an episode about Justin Fields last year and about why we should keep him. And it was very detailed. We went in depth on why it's a better idea to keep him rather than drafting Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or Anthony Richardson. Give him one more year. And at the end of that episode, one of the things we said is, and you know what? If he sucks, you'll be in position to draft Caleb Williams. You move forward a year, and we've made a similar episode, another full hour, just going into why we need to move on from Justin this offseason. Now, I think what I didn't expect is how strongly the Bears and the NFL agreed on moving on from Justin Fields. But long story short, we put out a couple hours of content on why we like Justin Fields before, why we don't like him right now. Everybody can go back and listen to those. But yeah, like you said, we kind of grieved through those episodes, right? That's everything we've ever thought about the guy.
Yeah. Well, and I think... I feel like some people kind of treated it like a little bit like a heel turn, like it was a betrayal that he eventually gave up at Justin Fields. And I just want to say, like, because people are like, well, how come you were one of the people arguing strongest for keeping him last year versus, and I'm just like, but because the situation changed. I really hate this idea, especially in sports, that you got to like dig into one take and stick with it forever and not like it's somehow a weakness to adjust to new information. Because what I know about Every take that I give, I think if you listen to this podcast or you follow me on Twitter, I think you figured out that everything I do is very much driven, a lot of it anyways. I mean, I do make observation based on tape, and I played football, I coached football, I like to observe football. But like I back everything up with numbers, with data, and history. It's like I'm a historian, that's the big check. And so like the history of development curves for a quarterback, the history of potential outcomes for quarterbacks a year ago, after year two, there's a lot of different outcomes for a guy who has played like Justin Fields had played through 2 years. There were a lot of potential outcomes based on history. And a year later, there were a lot fewer. And it was hard for me to take the possible paths that he offered us over the possible paths that right now Caleb Williams offers. So it's not a weakness ever to change your position as new information comes in. Now, the key thing, and this is something that I'm going to hammer certain people on Bears Twitter for, I think, for a while, is, you know, you have to acknowledge you did it. You have to acknowledge reality. I think you have to back up your evolution, and I think you have to show why you changed. And I think it's also kind of important you know, as you're changing not to be an asshole to everyone who disagrees with you. Because, yeah, there are a lot of people out there now who, now that this trade has happened, suddenly there are a lot of people who spent the last couple months calling people like me fat idiots, who were like, whoa, Caleb Williams, you guys seen this dude? He's great. And just pretending they never said the shit that they said. And I will never respect that. It is okay to change your position as new information comes in. It is not okay to just basically pretend you never said what you said, and try to fake your way out of it. So anyways, yeah, Justin Fields is gone. I think we've really said all that we can say there. I think at some point maybe, and I think maybe not just for Justin Fields, but I do think this is a when we're trying to kill time later in the offseason and we need some episode discussions. I do want to talk about quarterback development and failing a guy versus will the cream always rise to the top kind of thing. Because I think Justin Fields really tests a lot of the beliefs that I have in terms of, like, can you fail a guy or will a guy who's good always succeed? Or, you know, could the Bears have, if the Bears had done things differently, would he have been good enough? So there's a lot of questions there, and I think that's worth discussing at a later time. But
it's the Draymond Green argument. Like, everybody says, wow, what an amazing job by the coaches when Kawhi Leonard is good, but when the number one pick overall busts, nobody blames it on the coaches sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to say there, but we don't have to say it right now. I think that's worth revisiting later. But speaking of quarterback development, we got to talk about some guys that I think...
Some prospects, young some men prospects. To get knee these deep.
These guys need development. So I left off with Jaden Daniels. Travis, you listened to my Jaden Daniels brilliance.
I did. I mean, also I've read your notes and
you have.
I've heard you talk about him for many
you
weeks.
Have.
So.
You have. But I'm going to give you the floor for a minute. What would you have to say about Jaden Daniels before we move on?
Oh, see, that was a very good episode for you to do solo. And that's because my thoughts on NFL quarterbacks, usually put them into two categories, right? There's one, do I think you're a starting NFL quarterback? And not just that, but somebody who could take me over the top, because that's the most important position, maybe in professional sports. And then there's the other guys. And the other group that I would even consider drafting is like good backup. Guy who can come in for two or three games a year while your guy is down. If he has to come in for eight or nine games, we're probably fucked, right? Like, I don't really care about that guy. Good backup. There's this guy in the middle ground, the guy who is only either going to be amazing or flame completely out of the league. And I would put Jaden Daniels firmly in that spot, and I would say that his potential to actually being really good in this league is so low that I have no interest in Jaden Daniels whatsoever, which, I mean, it's been blowing my mind that some people really think Washington is going to take him over Drake May. But well, there's a lot of smoke.
There's a lot of smoke, enough that I have to admit that it must be a slight possibility. And if it is, if it does happen, I really do think what most we'll find out later in the ashes of the Washington organization when it inevitably fails. I think almost 100% what I think will happen is we'll find out that someone in that brand spanking new ownership group of theirs, someone was like, this guy won a Heisman Trophy. This guy is drawing comparisons to Lamar Jackson. Doesn't matter from who, doesn't matter if they're legit, but he's drawing them. I think that's the guy we should take. And he overrode...
I know you talked about it, but it's so
we
it's
did
so
talk about
baffling.
This. Well, actually, we didn't talk
we
about it.
Didn't talk
I
about
talked
this.
About it? You That's weren't right. there.
We did talk about you this, Kyle. There. So we're free. We don't have to say it. We didn't talk about this. The comparison to Lamar Jackson is asinine. It's ridiculous.
It's absurd.
The only comparison I can come up with him, the best comparison, is Mike Vick. It's young Mike Vick, and I think there are just people out there who don't remember Mike Vick. There are even people who probably
I can't go.
Him.
I can't even.
And
I can't
think
even go that far because, like, Mike
well,
Vick
this is
hadn't...
the thing. I think some people think Mike Vick was better than he was. And he was very flashy. He was very explosive. He was very fun. But Mike Vick wasn't good.
See, the guy that was actually Mike Vick was Justin Fields. Justin Fields is Michael Vick. That's...
I mean more of a modern Michael Vick, I could see. But I'm saying Jaden Daniels is not the modern Mike Vick.
He can't even be.
I think Jaden Daniels is old Mike Vick, but he's in 2024.
I don't even think he's that, because again, Mike Vick had a top five arm of all time for me. And Jaden Daniels, I'm not sure. Travis, gun to your head. Who definitively has a stronger arm, in your opinion? Sure. Alex Smith or Jaden Daniels?
Ooh. They have very similar arms, don't they?
Right. So isn't that kind of bad that you're hesitating there if you want to make it? And that's the thing with...
I will say this is that right there is very similar to people saying last year about Bryce Young, that he's so good at creating, he's so good at doing things like off time when everything that I saw of him was bad. The strong arm thing feels like people superimposing Mike Vick on him.
Right.
JD Daniels, you're right. It's not an Alex Smith.
It's not there. Well, the thing is, like, people say the thing about Jaden Daniels too, that they said about Bryce Young. And the thing about Bryce Young is he legitimately was creative on a collegiate level. He really was. We talked about how Bryce Young was great at buying himself time to get out of the pocket and make a throw. But how we were worried about him in the NFL, because in college he always did that and then had to reset his feet
right
before he could make, how he couldn't just like get out of the pocket and whip it 40 yards without setting his feet like a Josh Allen does. And we said in the NFL, if you are a guy who doesn't have those outside-the-box tools, then it's a net negative if you play like that. Like, yeah. Kenny Pickett is a guy who was a creator in college, but that works against him in the NFL, because in the NFL, with those tools, those mediocre tools, you have to be a guy who wins within the pocket, wins within structure. And if you try to create and you can't, that's just actively a net negative. And that Jaden Daniels is funny in that Jaden Daniels doesn't create at the collegiate level. He doesn't.
Right.
People keep saying he does because they don't know how to distinguish between a guy who can run and a guy who can create. But Jaden Daniels does not create. He runs. That's it. He attempted 15 passes all year long while scrambling. That's it. That's insane. That's not creating.
My biggest problem with Jaden Daniels is, I mean, he is this big flash in a pan, like just fun highlight reel kind of guy. The problem is, if you watch his highlights, the first thing you notice is, oh my God, Malik Nabers is really good. You do not notice Jaden Daniels first. You're like, that guy, that receiver is insane. That looks like Randy Moss. I can't believe he's 3 inches shorter than Randy Moss. The second thing you notice is, holy shit, Jaden, slide. Oh my God. What is wrong with you, you psychopath? Yeah. I can't believe he hasn't been injured. The man has a suicide wish. And then you notice, like, oh, he's got explosive runs. And then after that, you start to look at, like, oh, does he have arm strength? Can he throw the ball on time? Would he be able to do this without the best wide receiver group in the nation? And we're going to talk about a couple guys today who have the same problem as Jaden Daniels, that everyone is underplaying compared to Penix and Nix, which is that he's been around forever. This is an old man beating up on kids in the college, and that's something that I know you and I both hate from a prospect. Yeah. We hate the fifth-year senior coming into the draft.
People keep making a fake comparison to Joe Burrow, and I said,
horrendous.
There is a difference between a guy who it's not the age, it's the reps. It's not the age, it's the reps. Over and over, whether it's, because people say this about the NFL too. You still hear this with Sam Darnold. Like, hey, he's only 24 though. Like, it doesn't matter. It's not the age, it is the reps. At a certain amount of time, once you've seen X amount of NFL snaps, it's mental. It's not about physical. It's not that there's an extra, you know, the problem with Sam Darnold is not that he entered the league too young and he needs to hit second puberty before he gets an extra boost to his stats. Once you have the reps, once you've had the number of reps where history says these things stabilize, where you should have figured it out by now, it really doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. So, like, with Joe Burrow, he didn't have the reps. Ohio State, you know, because Joe Burrow, the tools don't wow you in practice, probably. Ohio State kept trying to start more athletic guys that let them run their option stuff. They didn't really give Joe Burrow a chance. Joe Burrow went to LSU. He had one good year as a starter, and then he had a second year that was all world, all time, 6,000 fucking yards, 60 touchdowns, and then he went to the NFL. If you ignored the fact that he went to Ohio State and had a couple years of backup reps, like if you just, if Joe Burrow had just entered LSU as a freshman and had that career path, you would never have questioned him as a first overall pick. You'd have been like, yeah, that's a normal, yeah, he had one freshman year, basically, and then he was an all-world sophomore, and then he jumped to the draft. Jaden Daniels was a true freshman starter, and then he started for four more years. He wasn't even considered a day three pick entering, or day two pick entering this year's draft, and now suddenly he's better than Drake May?
I mean, it's the same exact career path due to COVID as Hendon Hooker last year. Started out at a lower level Power 5, which isn't going to be the Power 5 this next year, school, right? It was Virginia Tech for Hooker, and it's Arizona State here for Daniels. 2 years, both of them, and then they transfer to a bigger school. They have the COVID year, and suddenly you've got this fifth year, and you've actually had almost 6 years of experience in Division I NCAA football. And he's surrounded by talent, just like Tennessee was for Hendon Hooker. And it turns into this. It turns into a potential Heisman Trophy, which worked out for Daniels and didn't quite happen for Hooker because he got hurt. But it's basically the same thing. It's just the time. He just had enough time. They're the NFL Alex Smith of college football. You got so much damn time that eventually you just took over, man. And there is nothing to trust about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this isn't about Jaden Daniels. We're spending a lot of time on this, but it is irritating.
Well, I wanted to let you have your chance to say your piece. I wanted to let you to weigh in.
To me, he is like barely in the same conversation as J.J. McCarthy, who we're going to talk about.
Right. So J.J. McCarthy is fun because, so you and I tend to take two totally different approaches when it comes to grading quarterbacks for the draft.
Yeah.
You take a much more practical, in a sense, way, because for you, you're very much like, look, either I think a quarterback is a guy that I can see winning Super Bowls, or I don't want him in the first round at all. What's the point?
Right.
And I take a much more of a, okay, if I'm an NFL GM and I need a quarterback, I can't just punt and punt and punt and waiting for the right guy to come along. Because if you do that, what happens is you get Arthur Smith. What just happened? The Falcons every year have said, no, that guy's not the guy. That guy's not the guy. That guy's not the guy. But you know what? Rolling with Desmond Ridder gets you fired too. Like, at a certain point, you have to just take a guy that you like but maybe don't love and hope you get lucky.
It's very true.
Or you get fired. So I think JJ is the perfect example of a guy that you normally wouldn't give a first round grade to because you don't really see JJ McCarthy as a guy who's going to carry you to Super Bowl wins.
Right.
And I don't necessarily either, but I do look at JJ McCarthy and I see, you know, if you put him in the right system, and all the smoke right now is about the Minnesota Vikings wanting to trade up and take the kid, and you want to talk about what is the right system for J.J. McCarthy, it's that one. It is that Shanahan, McVay style, heavy play action, under center, throwing lots of in breakers. Don't ask him to do too much outside the numbers. Let him throw inside. Let him throw to his tight end. Let him throw to J.J. or to Justin Jefferson on crossers and digs. And I can see where, you know, there's a little Kirk Cousins there, which is, I'm sure, what the Vikings are looking at. They're looking at, you know, what if we could get our Kirk Cousins to cost like $40 million less for a couple of years? Is that worth a couple first round picks to us? So JJ to me is the last guy, because that's my hottest take, my most incendiary take. Jaden Daniels is not a first round grade for me. He's not.
Yeah.
He's probably absolutely. And people are going to turn around and they're going to dunk on me for that, cuz he's going to go top 5, might go top 2. People are going to say, "Oh, look at this dumb shit. You said he wasn't even a second, or you said he wasn't even a first rounder." And I'm like, "That's not the point. I didn't have a first round grade on Zach Wilson either." And he went number 2 overall, and you could say I was wrong because he went number 2 overall, but I would say history says I was right because he was a terrible piece of dog shit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the last thing I'd want to say about Jaden is we nailed the Zach Wilson thing, and I'll say the same thing about Jaden I said about Zach Wilson, which is I would be plumb fucking shocked if he would. Got another NFL contract after his rookie deal.
He is, yeah, absolutely. He is, and again, most of these guys have like one flaw. They absolutely do. The perfect prospect rarely exists. If you want to talk about perfect prospects for me, basically it was Andrew Luck and Trevor Lawrence in that they, and like I said, when we were talking about Caleb, I have Caleb rated higher than I had Trevor Lawrence, but at the same time, I was more confident in some ways in Trevor Lawrence because Trevor Lawrence, there was just literally not one thing you could point to. With Caleb, there is one thing, and I think we're not really worried about it anymore, but it's still there. With Trevor, it just wasn't there. So all of these guys have one thing. With Caleb, it's the time to throw, and a little bit it's the fumbles. Drake May has some pocket presence things that I'm a little worried about. JJ will get into
bad feet. Don't forget the bad feet.
The bad feet. JJ will get into here in a second, but I already hinted at it. It's you know, some of the outside the numbers stuff. I don't know that he throws with a lot of touch. I think he's all zip, no touch. Bo Nix, we'll get into. We're not going to spend much time on Bo Nix, but we'll get into Bo Nix's thing. We'll get into Michael Penix's thing. All these guys have a thing. Jaden Daniels has like five things.
Yeah.
And they are all things that like historically are, every one of them is like, this is not like a thing that guys have. So like he would have the highest pressure to sack rate of anybody we've ever seen be successful. The closest guy is Joe Burrow, who was still quite a bit lower, and who still has taken a shit ton of sacks. So it's not like it's not a problem, it's just that Joe Burrow makes up for it. So then you ask, does Jaden make up for it the same way that Joe Burrow does? And no, he doesn't, because he's not as good at short passing. In fact, his short passing numbers are comparable to guys like Kenny Pickett and Paxton Lynch. There's your red flag there. His deep ball career attempt percentage is in the Mac Jones, that territory. There's your red flag there. The amount at which he scrambles is in Malik Willis, Justin Fields territory. There's your red flag there. He has like five different things.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like, you know, people tend to take draft prospects and they're like, oh, he's got Pat Mahomes's arm and he's got Aaron Rodgers' escapability. But Jaden Daniels has done the opposite and he has amalgamated all of the best quarterbacks' weaknesses. He's just got all, like, you look at the lists of the low end that he's on, like pressure to sack rate, and you're like, yeah, but Lamar Jackson's got on there. Yeah, but Joe Burrow's on there, and you're like, yeah, but he's taking their weaknesses.
Yeah.
He's stealing the bad parts of their game.
He's got the pocket presence of Justin Fields and the arm and aggressiveness of Mac Jones. And I'm just like, I'm gonna stop you right there. I'm off this train. Those two things right there are enough that I am no longer interested in the product you are selling. But anyways, we're not talking about Jaden anymore. We're talking about JJ McCarthy. So
we're trying.
Anyways, this hot take, Jaden Daniels is not a first round grade for me. JJ McCarthy is a first round grade for me. Now, ideally, you know, in a sane world, he would be like the 20th overall pick. He's going to be the fourth probably, but he is a first round grade for me. I don't think he's a first round grade for you. Is that correct? Based on the Travis scale, where either you can win a Super Bowl or I don't give a shit that you exist, right?
So I'm of two minds on this, and it depends on how we're looking at it, right?
Give me because some brain here, Travis.
If we're talking
two brains,
if we're talking about, here's one brain, here's the monkey brain. If I am specifically a couple of teams, I do like JJ McCarthy. The one team that I think specifically should absolutely take JJ McCarthy is the Rams. If they know McVay is going to stick around, I think he is the ideal McVay quarterback. I think McVay grabbing that guy and taking off with him, that would be fantastic. Obviously, the best place for him to go would be San Francisco, but we've kind of talked about this. That's a moot point, right? Like,
yeah, I think that's Shanahan, the best place for Lewis.
Shanahan could take. It doesn't matter who the hell goes to San Francisco.
I mean,
they're
admit
be
it.
Great.
Admit it. You kind of want. When the Jets are inevitably forced to just release Zach Wilson here in a little bit, you kind of want to see him go to San Francisco, don't you? And then you want to see Brock Purdy suffer a minor injury because you just want
to
see.
I just need to know.
Like, Kyle, are you that good? Can you, like, there's the ultimate test. Could you do it? Like, you want to know, right? You're a little curious.
I am very curious about it. To what extent can you do this, Kyle
Shanahan? If we plopped 2009 Jamarcus Russell on the Niners, could you do that, Kyle? I want to know. I just want to know. Yeah, I just want to see.
You said the Vikings are a good fit. I understand that they have some of those tendencies in their scheme.
Well, they have the tendencies that they have also. I mean, they have Justin Jefferson. They have Jordan Addison. Right. They have TJ Hockenson. There are, I think you'd have to be a pretty shitty prospect not to make to look passable, pun intended, in that system. But, all right, he's got a
but. NFL defenses have had time to catch on to this concept, and there is a reason that there are only certain dudes who seem to be able to reproduce this, right? There's a reason that I'm saying McVay, Shanahan, or McDaniel are the dudes that could do this, right? I don't want to trust the Vikings with that, right? I don't want to take a gamble on it because, and I know they, look, I'm no Vikings fan, guys. I'm happy to watch them crash and burn, but the moves they've been making really make it seem like they want to trade two first-round picks for one to take McCarthy, and that is, I think that's a big old waste. But for me, if he goes to the Rams, I think that's a first-round pick you make. I think any other team, absolutely not. This is not the dude. This is a guy whose top end is like, I don't know, maybe in 4 years he's the 14th best quarterback in the NFL, top 15, top 16 quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, he's, I think confident. I think your hope with, if you're looking at JJ, you're looking at Jared Goff, and you're saying, what if he had about 10% more scrambling ability, maybe 20%. I'll go as far as 20. And what if he had just about like 3 or 4 more points of arm strength is, I think, the theory here.
I think.
His, I know you are really down on JJ McCarthy's arm strength.
We're going to talk about him throwing outside the numbers because it is comical.
I don't think that's an arm strength thing, though. I think that's a touch thing.
Okay, so we've got to talk about this because you and me, I'm enjoying this argument, though. But we both agree, when JJ throws outside the numbers,
it's bad
things happen.
Yes, I think it's because he is a one-speed thrower. And I think that's why, like, in terms of short passing. So, hold on, is that on there? So one thing that I found really interesting, I'm just going to cherry pick. I'm not going to go through my whole J.J. McCarthy notes that I wrote up. I'm just going to cherry pick little things here and there that I found interesting. But one thing that I found interesting is he has, so out of, I want to say, like, first and second round quarterbacks that I've looked at, so like 45 guys, I want to say, his completion percentage on short throws, the 1 to 10 yard throws, is 77.3%. Which was 16th best. That's pretty good. But his PFF career grade on those throws was just 64.2, which was only 36th. And then, so if you want to compare him to like those Tua types and those Goff types, Goff had an 82.1 grade on short throws. Tua was 73.6. So those guys were, they graded out really well on short throws. JJ looks a bit more like, okay, well, here's a guy who was at 79.3%, but only had a 67.6 grade. And this is another guy that actually JJ had a lot of similarities to in terms of the overall profile, in terms of average depth of target, big time throw rate, adjusted completion percentage, just in terms of being of above average athleticism and scramble ability, but not like game breakers. And so the person I'm saying that JJ reminds me of in these categories is Mitch Trubisky. And I think
you're
that's
not wrong.
I think that's where that shows up on the outside the number stuff too. Cause I never, would you ever say that arm strength was Mitch's problem? Cause I wouldn't.
No, absolutely.
Mitch had a good arm, but Mitch was one of the worst deep passers you've ever seen. And it's because Mitch had no touch. There was just no ability to layer in throws. And that's what JJ is. He's very one speed. And I think that's why there's such a disparity between his completion percentage on short throws and his grade on short throws, because he hits the target, but he's like, if he's throwing you a slant, he's firing it at you and he's hitting you right in the chest, but he's not really like leading you where you're getting 4 or 5 yards after the catch. You know,
this is great, man. We usually don't watch tape and notice the exact same things. Right. I'm loving this shit because that's exactly what he's doing. He hits you in the numbers.
He's firing bullets on a curl, but he's throwing it to you, and it's a little late. It's a little behind. You're not catching and turning upfield. You're just catching. You're getting tackled. And so I think that's why, like, there's kind of a despair. And I think that's the same thing that happens on those outside the numbers. Do I have the numbers for the outside? Do I have the numbers for outside?
Do we have the numbers for the outside? Can you give me the numbers, guys?
So he's so good and so frequent throwing inside the numbers because he's very good. He is good, especially in the intermediate middle of the field, which is Jaden Daniels' worst area, as we talked about. So that's what JJ's got going for him, and that's a good area to be good if you want to be in that Shanahan system. Yep. But he ranked in the terms of the draft class, he ranked dead last in out of the five guys in this draft class that I've looked at when it comes to throwing deep left. And he also attempted a deep left throw only 5% of the time, which was only slightly more often than Daniels and Nix. He attempted a throw to the deep right part of the field just 1.9% of the time, which was absolutely dead last of all the guys in the class. And he had the second lowest completion percentage and the lowest yards per attempt on deep throws outside the numbers. He was dead last in the class in completion percentage and yards per attempt to the intermediate left part of the field too. So basically once you get beyond 10 yards, the only part outside the numbers where JJ was very good was the intermediate right. He's very good at those crossing routes in that 10 to 20 yard range that are crossing in front of his face, those glances, those posts in that area.
That's also where they rolled him out a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So yeah, I don't think it, but I don't think so. Ultimately, yes, I kind of agree with you on the point that outside the numbers, he's bad. He really is bad. I think you interpreted that kind of as an arm strength thing. I think he's got plenty of juice, but it is it's the touch that he's missing. And I will agree, he does not have. God, we've had so many great discussions about arm strength in this class because I think an arm strength versus arm talent.
It's true.
Because I think Caleb Williams is such a perfect example of a guy who he does have great arm strength, but he also has just like immaculate arm talent. And to me, with Caleb, it's that ability to access full velocity no matter what his platform is.
Yeah.
And also to layer in the throws. And JJ is a guy that I think if you put JJ and Caleb side by side in shorts at the combine and you had them both just like line up and throw the ball as hard as they possibly could, I don't think that number is going to be very different for the two of them.
So the Tyson Bagent sort of thing, right?
Right.
Threw harder than Pat Mahomes.
But I think if you suddenly started, if you released a couple of very angry dogs in there, and told them that they had to like keep making those throws while escaping those dogs. You'd see a very marked difference between Caleb and JJ. JJ, I think, has plenty of velocity. He's not good throwing off platform either. But he does. I think he has a strong. I think in terms of arm strength, for me, it's definitely. Well, I guess raw arm strength. If we were just talking pure throw power, for me, it's May, Caleb. Small gap or decent size gap than JJ. If we're talking arm talent, just in terms of the ability to access all of their velocity from different angles, it's Caleb, May, and then a very big drop to JJ, and then Daniels after that.
Right.
I think he's got an NFL starter arm without question, but it is
sure.
He's a one speed thrower. There's not a ton of touch. I don't think he. And I think that's going to be the biggest obstacle to, because like the best fit for him certainly is a Vikings type system, a Shanahan type system. And I think he could be good in Minnesota. But I think if he isn't, the main reason will be kind of a Mitch thing where it's like, okay, technically the completion percentage is there, but the accuracy still isn't. Like you're hitting the guy, but you're not hitting him in a way that enables him to get upfield, that enables him in a way to get yak. That's a concern I have for him too.
Yeah, so I think, so we're having a difference of opinion between arm strength and practical arm strength, basically.
Yes.
And what, arm you strength, know, raw arm strength, yeah, like Kyle Bowler, shit, you know, you get on your knees and you whip the ball through the goalposts. That's cool. What do you do during the game?
Do you ever get on your knees and whip the ball through the goalpost?
I mean, oh, I put it right through the goalpost.
Oh, hell yeah, buddy. All right.
Weird. Wow, there's a lot of that going around
today. Kyle Bowler, I miss him. He was fun.
We miss guys like Kyle Bowler. Speaking of, Michael Penix.
Yeah, oh, perfect transition.
Boy.
Are we done with JJ?
Like, Kyle, well, the thing is, I kind of like to talk about them together because to me, if you could fit them together like a puzzle, like a two-piece puzzle, they would have holes in the exact places the other guy would not, and it would make the perfect quarterback.
It's true, because Penix can only throw outside the numbers.
Yeah, Penix will crush the outside of the field.
He will.
But he ain't fucking moving, that's for sure. He's not going anywhere. He can place the ball, I would say. I would say that's pretty good. But if he shuffles his feet at all, he sure can't. There's so much going on. Well, the other thing is, we have a lot of tape of Michael Penix. We know about Michael Penix. J.J. McCarthy, the one thing we haven't talked about, which usually everybody talks about first, he's a bit of a mystery. Michigan barely used the guy. He was throwing 20 or less passes a game. My favorite was going back and watching the Penn State-Michigan game and realizing that he threw no passes in the second half of that game. Close game the whole way, guys. He made no pass attempts in the entire second half.
And I will say this. Normally, that would be a huge red flag for me with most coaching staffs, where I would be like, I'm not even considering a guy whose coaching staff wouldn't trust him to... But you have to remember that when Jim Harbaugh had Andrew Luck, the guy that won the Heisman was Toby Gerhardt. Yeah. Like, Jim Harbaugh right now has Justin Herbert, and his first move was to get rid of every wide receiver, hire Greg Roman, and there are whispers that if Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers are on the board, they're going to take Joe Alt. Like, that's one thing I won't hold against JJ, but it makes him really hard to project. It just does.
Yeah.
Because the lack of dropbacks just is a problem.
Well, the thing that I talk about every time we talk about quarterbacks is I want to see them play the best defenses, and I want to see how they play against those guys. I don't really care if
he wants to see the eye of the tiger, Michigan. The thrill of the fight. He wants to see them rising up to the challenge of their rivals.
Well, and when we talked about Caleb Williams, we talked about Drake May. One of the things we talked about is they didn't really play those best defenses, right? Because we had a guy in the Pac-12 and we had a guy in the ACC. Most of the best defenses this last year were in the Big Ten. Well, we've got a Big Ten quarterback here, so I'm thinking, well, let's watch Penn State, let's watch Ohio State, let's watch the Iowa game, let's see what this guy does when he plays the three best defenses in the country that aren't Michigan, because that's, you can't do that. And guess what happened? He basically didn't do shit, he didn't throw the game. He went out there, he threw 8-yard hitches, and then he handed it off to Blake Corum, so I still can't tell you how good he is, because Harbaugh asked him to do nothing.
Yeah,
he was like, turn around and hand it off, man.
That was such a disappointment. It really was, because I remember, like, I talking with, I'm going to name drop a guy because I'm cool.
Do
Brad Spielberger of PFF, you know, who does all their cap stuff and literally wrote the book on draft trade value. We were talking about JJ McCarthy going into those final games of the season or whatever. And he was like, this is going to be huge for him. I mean, Penn State, Ohio State, those are going to be, that's going to be like 80% of his eval in the eyes of the NFL. And he threw 8 passes.
He did nothing.
It's like, what do you do with that?
And it doesn't, and they still won. Like, the game plan was sound. They just didn't need a fucking quarterback. And then when he did exactly what it sounds like, what the numbers show. He ripped a pass into his tight end, got the first down, his tight end falls down. Like, so, that's the J.J. McCarthy pass. But you don't know. Can he lead his receiver? I don't know. They never ask him to do that.
And here's, yeah, so I do want to give some names with the dropbacks. I do. Because, so here's the list of guys in the spreadsheet who were first or second round quarterbacks who had under 800 dropbacks in their college career. JJ, Anthony Richardson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Tua, Dwayne Haskins, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, Mitch Trubisky, Carson Wentz. So now that list is not necessarily doom, because certainly...
it's a list of risks.
Josh Allen has been quite successful. Yep. Tua has become... he's certainly got Tyreek Hill.
Tua is probably better than Brock Purdy.
We think. Well, do I think that? I think that. Kyler Murray is Kyler Murray.
All right, here's a question. But, I've been thinking about this. I don't know why. Kyle, if San Francisco and Miami just cut their fucking quarterback today, just cut them for no reason, what's the market for those two guys?
It's still extensive just because of quarterback desperation.
You think so?
I mean, Travis, do you remember a couple years ago?
What are we paying Brock Purdy on the open market?
I don't know, but do you remember when the Jaguars gave Nick Foles $70 million?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember. Do you remember when the Bears traded for that guy?
I also remember that.
Took that contract off their books.
But no, so what I was going to say about that list of quarterbacks, Anthony Richardson, we don't really know much yet. It really sucks that he lost that year of development. I'm scared for Tony that might end up being more of a problem in the long run than we think.
I'm so fucking sad about Tony. Good luck, Tony.
But I want to point out, though, that Josh Allen and Tua are successes on that list, but they weren't successes until year three of their NFL careers.
Which tracks.
So we've really only seen one guy on that list in Kyler who was successful in the NFL and was successful fairly quickly in the NFL. The others took time. So I do think with JJ, the lack of dropbacks is something to consider. Not in that I think it's necessarily a crippling red flag. Like, you can't touch this guy. You can't take a risk on a guy with that few dropbacks. Like, for instance, Cam Newton is before the existence of the spreadsheet, but I doubt he had much more than that in terms of dropbacks. Or, I mean, a lot of the ones he did have were at junior college. I don't know how you weight that. So I don't think it's necessarily a red flag, but I do think, I wonder if that's going to mean a little bit more development time than people think, even if he does succeed. And then in that case, that makes me wonder, because the argument, obviously, that you're hoping for, if you're JJ McCarthy, if you're drafting JJ McCarthy, you're hoping he's going to be successful fairly early so that even if he's not elite, you can maximize that rookie contract window before you got to pay him. But then what happens if the lack of dropbacks means he's actually a little bit more raw than you think, and you actually only get 1 or 2 years where he is good and cheap, and then you have to decide to pay him, which is kind of what Miami is in right now with Tua.
Yeah.
Because, like, right now, I mean, right now, Travis, you want to ask the open market for Brock Purdy. Right now, there's not an open market, but the Dolphins right now are sitting there right now asking how much they pay this guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, that's a debate right now.
God, I can tell you right now, if you're going in and you're drafting J.J. McCarthy and you're hoping he's good quickly, that's a mistake. Like, that would be
surprising. You feel confident in that?
I mean, I'm confident that he won't be. I'm confident he's going to struggle to begin with. I mean, if you've lost, anytime you have to mold your offense around a guy's weakness, which you will with JJ, you really do lose part of your playbook throwing outside the numbers, especially in that intermediate range. The deep pass, I don't think there's going to be that big of an issue with the deep pass for him. I think as long as there's a good structure for that, he'll be okay. Michigan just doesn't do that. But that intermediate pass to the numbers is basically impossible for him. He is an inverse Russell Wilson if you look at his heat map.
Russell Wilson
is... you're losing some throws.
I mean, that's Tua. Tua doesn't throw outside the numbers very well. True. That's Brock. Brock doesn't like it. That's Goff. Goff doesn't like to throw outside the numbers very much. So there are successful...
It can work.
That's ultimately, like, that's what my argument for JJ boils down to. is that we've actually seen two different kinds of quarterbacks lately, where you look at a Justin Fields who has all of that talent, and you look at Brock Purdy who does not, and you ask yourself, like, why is Kyle Shanahan, or if you don't want to use a Kyle Shanahan example, but you look at Jared Goff, his whole career being juiced by these guys, or you look at Tua being rescued in year three by McDaniel in a way that Justin has not been rescued. You look at these guys who I think we would both agree are not anywhere near as physically gifted as Justin Fields, right? Like, you would agree with that.
100%.
So what is it that, why is it that those guys are, and the truth of the matter is that it's easier to scheme up and around the weaknesses of a guy who will play within the scheme. That's all there is to it. Like, JJ McCarthy is going to fucking grip it and rip it. Like, if the play call says it's a 15-yard dig, 1, 2, 3, JJ's going to be there. Just trust that he's going to be there. Rip the football. He's going to do that. And a Justin Fields won't. He's going to sit there and he's going to hesitate and he's going to wait and see and he's going to get sacked. And so you can coach up a guy lacking in talent to an extent. Neither of us, that's the problem with JJ, is neither of us thinks he is in that same tier as Drake May or Caleb Williams, where, like, you can see that talent someday carrying a team to the Super Bowl consistently.
Right.
But you can coach up a guy like JJ in a way that I don't think you can coach up a Jaden Daniels, who I think is very much in that Justin Fields mold, where it's just like the things that he by nature won't do are a lot harder to fix than the things that JJ can't do.
Yeah.
So he's a functional starter for me. And this in the NFL, someone's going to give up a lot for a functional starter, because if you don't have a functional starter, you have Desmond Ridder and you get fired.
Well, the problem is, and I agree with everything you're saying, and the issue of value is what comes up to me, because the guy we keep talking about here is Kyle Shanahan, and the guy he has doing this is Mr. Irrelevant. It's a guy who is literally the first unrestricted free agent picked off their board, right? Like, after the draft, you can do this with a normal college quarterback. You could just pick a guy. You could do this with Tyson Bagent. If Tyson Bagent was sent to the Niners, he could do what Brock Purdy is doing right now. I feel very confident in that. Like, is it really worth what Minnesota's about to give up just to get a Brock Purdy? Are we so excited about what Brock Purdy has done with San Francisco that we're looking at JJ and saying, well, look, he could be our Brock Purdy, and we've just forgotten how easy it is to find Brock fucking Purdy out there? Like, why waste all this if that's what you need? If your requirement is shut up, listen to your coach, make the pass like a robot, and really, like, want to throw over the middle of the field, which, now, to be fair, want to throw over the middle of the field is a big deal. I don't want to undersell that. That is important right now in the NFL, and there are guys that don't do it, and they get screwed, and that's part of the reason Penix probably shouldn't be taken. But yeah, I don't. Is it just a waste? Am I alone in this? Bo Nix could probably do that too, right? If he went to the right team,
maybe.
He's not as good as McCarthy, maybe. but if you're relying on the coaching, if you're relying on the scheme, and you're relying on mindset over everything else,
I think if you're Kevin O'Connell going for JJ, I think what you're telling yourself is, worst case, he's my Brock Purdy. Best case, he's got the raw tools to be even more than that. And I'm not telling you it's right, Travis. I don't think it's right, to be honest with you. But I think that's what they're telling themselves. I think they're saying, well, like, worst case, you know, I can make him look as good as Kyle has made Brock look, and that'll keep us all in our jobs. Best case, there's a little bit more there to unlock. And maybe we can, because, you know, he's got a little wiggle to him. JJ can run a little bit. He can. And he can, he does have, like I said, the raw arm strength. I think he needs to work on the arm talent bit. And I don't know how fixable that really is.
It's hard to say, because he was asked so little. So little was asked of him in college that there is that mystery to him, right? There's that little flavor, which to me, there's none of with Jaden Daniels.
No.
Right?
No, I feel like, you know, and if Jaden Daniels ends up being awesome, I will have overcommitted and people will dunk on me forever, and that's fine. It's happened. It happened with Josh Allen.
We do have to say the same thing we said about Josh Allen, which is in the 0.1% chance that he works out, boy, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, I mean, Jaden...
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, Jaden's a very electric, fun player to watch, for sure. No,
I think it's going to fucking work.
Okay, so we've got 10 minutes left. So we move on quickly. I think that's where the JJ thing is. I like ending on the mystery there. That's what people are selling themselves on. They're selling them. It is honestly to JJ's benefit right now, probably, that there is not more tape, more reps. You are being sold on the potential.
I did want to say, I kind of forgot because you were making so many good points right in a row. You're overloading me. That list you had of guys with under 800 reps. That was a list of guys with explosive potential that teams thought were like, man, they've got all these tools, really, really toolsy guys, really big guys, really, like, you know, just guys who you could sell yourself on for the future, mm-hmm. right? But there was risk. There was risk because you were like, oh, are they really NFL quarterbacks in the case of Richardson? The only guy I can think who wasn't thought of as that risky at the time was Kyler Murray. And that's because Lincoln Riley just churns out NFL-ready quarterbacks. With JJ... he doesn't have that, right? He doesn't have that explosive upside. I think you're kind of hoping that he's just a solid NFL quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, do you want to talk about Penix for real now?
I think so. For Penix, a lot of the same stuff we talked about for Jaden Daniels in a way, although he's much more aggressive than Jaden Daniels, and I would argue he's a much better deep passer outside the numbers than Jaden Daniels.
Oh, there's no doubt.
To Penix's credit, he does not avoid the middle of the field to the extent that Jaden does. So for instance, Jaden Daniels, excluding screens, Jaden attempted a pass middle of the field 10 plus yards 18.1% of the time, which was the 13th lowest of the 78 quarterbacks that I've looked at so far, that I have data for. Now, Penix was 20.4%, which is still low, still below average, more than Jaden. Where I would love to give him credit for that, though, the problem is that he also has one of the worst completion percentages of anybody in that particular category. He completed just 51% of his intermediate and deep middle passes, which is 60th best. And his grade's pretty low there too. So he is more willing to attempt those throws middle of the field than Daniels. He's just very bad at them.
Yeah.
Everything. And he also, I mean, just to talk about, he also has that long loopy delivery. I mean, the guy that keeps coming to my mind when I watch Michael Penix is Byron Leftwich. And we loved Byron Leftwich.
Still do.
I love that guy. But I saw his NFL career and then the last thing I want to say about Penix that really concerns me. So the loopy delivery, needing the platform, and then out of all of these 78 quarterbacks that I have this information for here now too, he has the third lowest overall total scramble rate of any of these quarterbacks. The only two guys who scrambled less than him so far that I can find are Aiden O'Connell and Mike White. The only other guys below even 3% that I could find were Cody Kessler, Kyle Trask, Nick Mullins, Josh Rosen. Just above Kessler was Drew Locke. These are guys... Not far above. That's Mac Jones. Gardner Minshew's in the neighborhood there. Bailey Zappi.
You might say he's immobile.
Yeah. And the thing is that you just don't see too many successful starters these days who are that immobile. And it almost... I started talking about this with Penix, and I had some people like, oh, but I thought you said Jaden Daniels scrambled too much. And I'm like, yeah, those are not the only two options, actually.
Yep.
There is a, you know, that you don't...
There's a wide gulf in the
middle.
There's
a healthy medium somewhere in there, guys. And that's why a lot of people... One of the things that's made Penix kind of a sleeper for other analytics guys who are just starting to discover the value of pressure to sack rate people be like, wow, Michael Penix, 6.5% pressure to sack rate, pretty sexy. And I said to that, I say, well, but you got to look at the lack of mobility. And so one thing that a lot of people liked about Mac Jones entering the NFL was he had a very low pressure to sack rate at Alabama. I want to say it was like 10%. And in the NFL, it's been 20%. And Gardner Minshew was at like 9% or 7% in college. And in the NFL, it's been like 18 or 19%. So for most people, pressure to sack rate stays fairly stable. But the guys who see these huge jumps, for the most part, are guys who are very immobile. And in college, their response to pressure was just turf it. Just get rid of the ball. It's a lot harder to do that in the NFL. The tackle box is smaller. The pockets collapse faster. It's harder to get outside the tackle box. Grounding is more strictly enforced. If your only response to pressure in the NFL is just turf it, that's significantly harder to do. Mac Jones found it significantly harder to do. Gardner Minshew has found it significantly harder to do. So I think Michael Penix will probably see a significant spike in his pressure to sack rate. And he's so bad moving his feet. Hold on, I'm going to pull up that tweet that I have referenced like 500 times of the stats for all of these guys when they've been forced to move off of their spot and throw.
I'll cover for you here for a minute while you look it up, but my favorite part of watching tape on Michael Penix, and his tape is very fun to watch for me, a guy who really like those like early 2000s NFL quarterbacks who are just gripping and ripping it, and their completion percentage like 56%. That's the kind of guy he is. They had him in the Oregon game. They were like on the 4-yard line, and they run Michael Penix like they're going to get a touchdown, and the announcer goes, "And Michael Penix is going to run?" And like he is incredulous. He's like, "What are they doing?" And he gets nowhere. The pole play failed, and he's just, his whole voice shoots up a register, and I'm like, yeah, that's the Michael Penix experience right there. He's not going anywhere, baby.
I like it. Yeah, the old school. Yeah, because the other guy, he makes me think of Byron Leftwich, and the other guy he makes me think of is Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah, and Drew like, Bledsoe, absolutely. And I don't absolutely.
Think you, and I don't think you could be Drew Bledsoe in 2024. Like, yeah. You could barely be Drew Bledsoe in 2001. Like, Tom Brady is remembered as being an immobile quarterback, and yet Bill Belichick literally said the reason they made the switch permanently from Bledsoe to Brady was because even Brady could move and escape the rush sometimes.
Right.
He could move within the pocket. Bledsoe had become literally just a completely stationary launch pad by that point in his career. Like he was taking his drop back and then he was throwing the ball. He was not moving. Anyway, so Penix.
Yeah.
Penix this year, when he was moved off of his spot, his initial launch point, he attempted a pass 71% of the time. Yay, Michael Penix. That's great. It's good always job, good buddy. To reset to throw. Jaden Daniels, as I noted, was at 20%, which was the lowest of anybody in all of Division I college football.
That is batshit crazy.
It's insane.
Okay.
So Penix, he attempted those passes. Let's see what happened when he attempted them. Oh, right. He was 9 of 36 for 89 yards with just one touchdown.
Oh, that's brutal. 9 of 36.
Yeah, 36.
Hold on. He can't throw on the run. He can't throw if he's not right where he was at the end of his
2.47 yards per attempt. So by comparison, for example, Caleb Williams threw 78 times when moved off of his launch spot, which is in and of itself freaking insane. There's a good USC offensive line stat. Not a good but there is a USC offensive line stat for you.
Yeah.
And he threw 78 passes and got 786 yards out of them. So he averaged over 10 yards per attempt on these throws, and Penix averaged 2.4. And he is completely useless the minute he has to move his feet. I just don't see – I think he could be fun. I think he could be like a Jacoby Brissett kind of guy where he has some really fun moments, but I just don't see a successful, durable NFL starter at that level of immobility, and especially when he's not particularly accurate.
Yeah, it frustrates me because, like I said, I just love that kind of quarterback.
He's so fun to watch. I mean, like I said, he looks like...
He has no place in the NFL
now. Yeah, he looks like the kind of quarterbacks we grew up with. Yeah, Drew Bledsoe is exactly who I thought of.
Drew Bledsoe is perfect. It's a perfect analogy for who he is. That's exactly who Michael Penix is. And unfortunately, it's way harder to beat Drew Bledsoe now. And Drew Bledsoe was just Drew Bledsoe back then.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Drew Bledsoe was even like he was pretty good. Drew Bledsoe was like the Jay Cutler of the 90s, where you were like, eh, he's fine, I guess. Like,
yeah, you're not upset that you've got that guy, but you're not upset that you've got that guy.
Okay, and then let's just do Bo Nix real quick because this one should be easy enough. I've got one stat for Bo Nix. Let me filter. Talk while I filter, Travis.
My takes on Bo Nix are, okay, what if you had a guy who had been around for 5 years, except for the first 4 years of his career, his team had just actively hated him, and all of his fans really thought he sucked, and then he had like a couple good years at the end of his career because of the COVID thing, and he has nothing superlative about him at all, and he shouldn't be drafted by any NFL team even to be a backup. There's my take on Bo Nix.
Okay. So here's the main, just I usually hate to boil a guy down to just one stat, but I think this one's convincing enough of a list that I think it's okay to do so. For his career, Bo Nix averaged 8.1 yards of average depth of target. Here is the list of guys, and actually I'm going to go up even a little higher. Here's the list of guys that we have seen even average under 8.5 and enter the NFL. Dwayne Haskins, Alex Mago, I don't even know who that is. Dorian Thompson Robinson hasn't really played much. David Blough from Purdue. That's the second time David Blough has come up in this series, and I still don't know how his last name's pronounced.
I think it's Bluff. He was Purdue Bluff. Quarterback, right? Yeah, it's Bluff.
Yeah, David Blough. Really? That is not okay. Paxton Lynch, Jake Luton, Brandon Doughty, Cody Kessler, Trevor Siemian, Josh Dobbs, CJ Beathard, Bo Nix, Tanner McKee, Devlin Hodges, Brett Hundley, Gardner Minshew, Luke Falk. That's all of the guys in the spreadsheet below 8.5 yards of ADOT. That's every single one of them.
That sounds right.
Your best case scenario here is Gardner Minshew with a little bit of waggle. Like, I think that's enough. I think that's all we do.
Don't trade Bo Nix.
I think one of the funniest things that people say to me is, because I pointed out that Bo Nix also has a lot of the same flaws as Jaden Daniels in terms of, like, Bo Nix does not throw middle of the field. Mm. Bo Nix does not attempt deep passes at a high rate. And people will say, well, you can't say he can't do those things. Oregon just didn't ask him to. And I'm like, why do you think Oregon didn't ask him to?
Yeah.
Do you think it's because Auburn did and they saw the results? Because you can go back and look at Auburn when Bo Nix was asked to throw deep a lot. You can go back to Auburn and ask when Bo Nix was asked to throw middle of the field a lot. You can't say Oregon Bo Nix isn't Auburn Bo Nix without asking why they're not the same guy.
Because I implore you to go speak with an Auburn fan about Bo Nix.
Yeah,
and you will immediately not want to be anywhere near that guy. Like if you can go through the first 3 years of a guy's career, which is normally the most you get before you're actually considered for the first or second round of the draft, and every member of the college team's fan base that he played for is glad that they're gone, maybe don't draft that fucking guy.
I'm kind of like, yeah, these super seniors, I kind of want to be like, can you imagine if Drake May, for some freaking reason, stayed in college for 4 more years and then got to play on a team with 2 surefire first-round wide receivers? What do you think 25-year-old Drake May is going to do with 2 first-round wide receivers? Like, come on. I had someone I finally had to block this person because she just was relentless every time I said anything about Jaden Daniels. But she was like, I said, I was like, Jaden Daniels was not anywhere near the kind of prospect that Drake May is when Jaden Daniels was Drake May's age. That, to me, should end the discussion right there. And she was like, yes, he was. He was Pac-12 Freshman of the Year. And I was like, okay. And she kept coming back at me, and I was like, all right, simple question. Drake May is leaving college right now because he is guaranteed to be a top five NFL pick, and he is guaranteed to get like $30-plus million. If Jaden Daniels, after his third year in college, was a guaranteed top five pick, guaranteed $30-plus million, why the fuck didn't he jump? Why didn't he go?
Why was he in college for so long?
Why was he in college for 3 more years? Like, why would he stay for 3 more years if he was that level of prospect 3 years ago? Use your goddamn brain. They don't use their goddamn brains, Travis.
No, they don't. Do you want to use your goddamn brain and rank all these quarterbacks? You said you'd do it at the very end.
Yeah,
let's give me all your ratings, man.
I think it's pretty clear for me. It's Caleb Williams, Drake May, and the gap between those two. It is Caleb and then Drake, and there is a gap. I agree. But the gap to me between those two is still smaller than the gap for me between those two and JJ, who is my QB3. And then it is a massive chasm. And then for me, honestly, yeah, Jaden's probably still QB4 just because of the rushing upside. But at that point, I mean, does it really matter? I would probably go Jaden Daniels. And then for me, honestly, I'd probably take Spencer Rattler over either Bo Nix or Michael Penix. Not that I think any one of the three of them is really going to work out, but I do think Rattler had one elite season at Oklahoma early in his career. He does have a really good arm. He can wiggle around a little bit, unlike Penix. He tested horribly. I was surprised by that.
He's a miserable douchebag.
His scramble data was much better than Michael Penix's, so I was surprised by the athletic testing, but still. I'd probably, if I'm buying a lotto ticket for a QB in round 2 or 3, I'm probably taking Penix over Nix or Penix, or I'm taking Rattler over Nix or Penix because I think I'm pretty confident in what those two guys are. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's Caleb, it's May, JJ if you gotta, and that's pretty much it for me, really, in all reality. What about you, sir?
I'll give you my Travis rankings. Caleb Williams is a number one overall pick. In most years, he's the number one overall pick. This year, too. I would say Drake, number one overall pick most years, number two overall prospect in this draft. I would say JJ, like I said, there's one exception. If the Rams want him in the first round, absolutely. I think you could go for that. But usually, I would say JJ's like a high second round pick. The good thing about JJ is if he fails as a starter, this is a dude who's going to be a very solid backup for a long time in the NFL. Very, very Marcus Mariota kind of quality to him. Like a guy you want on your roster, a guy you want to start a couple games every year. So there's low risk, I think, with JJ. And then just like I'm going to give you every year, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, and Bo Nix are do not draft for me. Just don't take them.
There you go. All right. We're done with quarterbacks.
Done with quarterback.
Breathe the air of freedom. Next week, we're going to start diving into wide receivers, right? Is that what we want to do?
Yeah. Yes. Wide receivers.
I don't think we're going to talk about running backs this year. We might talk a little bit about tight ends. So I think next week we'll do wide receivers and some tight ends. And then after that, probably we're going to talk about offensive line, right? Is offensive line getting an episode?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think we're going to give offensive line. I like talking about offensive linemen. I know the Bears almost aren't going to be involved.
Feel like we freaking nailed our tackle rankings last year. I'm pretty sure, like, because I think, what did we say? We settled on Darnell, Paris Johnson.
You want a full episode to gloat. You're right, though. We did. We killed those rankings.
We settled on Darnell, Paris Johnson, Broderick Jones.
Yep.
Who was the one? Anton Harrison, and then... was it Bergeron? Or no, Dewan Jones, I think, was our tackle 5.
We mentioned Dewan Jones because we were like, this dude's huge. Like the Bears don't want him. But if somebody has a great offense for that. But no, the other guy was, who was the guard tackle guy who didn't want the Bears to take?
Bergeron? I think it was Bergeron. I think he went to the Falcons. Anyways,
is that his name?
Cody Mock. Are you thinking of Cody Mock, too?
No, I knew Mock would be. That was the BYU guy, right?
Yeah. Oh, Freeland. Kyle Freeland was the BYU guy.
Western guard.
Are we thinking about Wanya Morris?
Skoronski
from Northwestern.
Skoronski is the guy.
We said Skoronski, but we both said the same thing. Skoronski's not really a tackle. And sure enough, he wasn't really a tackle.
That's right.
Well, yeah, no, I think we nailed those offensive line rankings last year.
That's part of how great we did. That's right.
We nailed them last year.
We fucking killed them.
We nailed it. So now is the time to do it again this year and get it completely wrong.
That's right. We need to even this shit out, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to ruin our reputations. So
we got to talk about defensive linemen.
Oh, God, yes. I'm so ready to talk about non-quarterbacks. I have put more work into the spreadsheet than ever, and I am ready to look at other positions for a little bit.
That's right. So it's time to rest until draft day, and we can joke about these guys and wherever the hell they're going.
Absolutely. Until Drake May ends up in Minnesota and we start pooping a little.
Yeah, let's not think about that.
Goodbye, folks. Way out that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.